Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Nice weather we're having, eh? It's Vox Pop on this Tuesday, December 2nd. It's snowing out there, so let's talk birds. It makes logical sense. Rich Guthrie is here to well, he's not here. He's on the phone. And frankly, if he doesn't call, I will just read AP wire copy as a parrot. Okay, so let's hope he calls. To take part in our bird discussion today, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 with your bird questions. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number's 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, in theory, and your birding questions are coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's birds today. We're discussing birds, and Rich Guthrie is with us. He's not here. The weather is terrible, and he thought he'd phone it in, which I've been doing for years. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC and is now the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. If you want to talk birds with Rich Guthrie, just do it. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Julie Hart cannot be with us today, but she will be back next month. We do this the first Tuesday of every month when possible. Hey, by the way, before we start the show, we are about halfway through this Giving Tuesday. What's Giving Tuesday? It's a way that you can support community organizations around wherever you are. And it's across the country this is going on. Sort of a, you know, you have your Black Friday, your Cyber Monday, your whatever Wednesday. This is Giving Tuesday, and this is a good thing. Community support makes what we do possible. And since we rely completely on community funding now, we ask you to take action and keep this station on the air and keep the service in our region. Your support really helps. We're asking you to join the thousands of others who are stepping up. You can do it one time. You can do it monthly, sustaining. Whatever, it makes a big difference in sustaining this radio station. All you got to do is go to WAMC.org and help us get through this Giving Tuesday together. Now, listen, I'm very happy that Rich Guthrie decided to call in. I was a little scared there for a bit. Rich Guthrie, are you coming in, sir?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. What a beautiful day, eh, Ray?
Did you try? You tried driving. How'd that work out?
It didn't at all. I greased up the old buggy and started to out on the road, the local road here, and I knew immediately that it was not a working proposition, and that was 2 hours ago. So I said, no, I don't think so, because, you know, my biggest challenge at this, from where I am, is the first challenge is the hill to get out of, just to get out of town.
Right.
And yeah, that wasn't going to work.
Well,
and I didn't want to get stuck halfway up the hill. So I just said, hey, Ray, we'll talk on the phone.
It's fine, man. I mean, we did a lot of these this way during the pandemic, the lockdown and what have you. So we know what we're doing. And, Rich, it's great to have you here. I got a stack of emails here, which I think we'll start with, and then we'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our number. This one came in earlier this morning, as a matter of fact, from Dennis in Westfield, who says, I recently read an online article by the Vermont Fish and Game Department about winter finches visiting from the north. Do we have any idea in this area, and what are some, or do we have any in this area? I apologize. I'm a slow reader. And what are some examples? And that's from Dennis in Westfield.
Yeah, that's a great question, because every now and then there is a sort of like a mass movement of northern birds that filtered down into our area, and that parade has already started. They would include birds like the evening grosbeak, the magnificent-looking evening grosbeak, gold and brown and black and white, the pine grosbeak, which is a really cheery, rosy, red, fat bird. It looks fat, but it's not. It's all fluff. And then the red poles and the siskins and some of the other northern birds, crossbills and the like, may be coming into the area. I know they have been sightings in the area, but only a sporadic few. and more so in the western part of the state and up in the northern regions. And Vermont is a good candidate for more of these. And yes, the numbers will probably increase as the winter progresses, especially with a day like today pushing things around. So, yeah, I think the forecasts are promising that there will be an influx of these rarely seen northern species. You know, they're so content with the climate up in Canada that they're just happy not to leave. Well, they're on their way.
All right, this is from Anne. Because of a huge rodent population, we are now only feeding the birds suet and mealy worms. We have an amazing population of bluebirds and others that are thoroughly enjoying these offerings. Two questions. One, should we add something to the mealies? Somebody mentioned powdered calcium. And two, can you recommend a hanging mealy worm feeder? Right now, we just have small dishes as they feast.
Well, the first question is, well, actually, I forgot the first question.
All right, I'm glad I didn't glad I didn't recycle this one. Should we add something to the mealies? Somebody had mentioned powdered calcium.
No. No, no, no.
No?
Well, it's certainly not the powdered calcium. If you want to add calcium to anything, use an eggshell or two. But don't worry about that just yet.
Okay.
That's more important later on in the season.
Right.
And as far as the feeder type platform is concerned, I think you're doing the right thing, a shallow bowl or a shallow feeder type would work best. There, I don't think there are any specific feeders that are designed especially for mealworms.
All right. This is from Peggy in, I don't know where Peggy's writing from. When's the best time to clean out my birdhouse?
I would say at this point, probably around the middle of March, if you can get out to them. That's the time when they'll start moving around looking for a site. If you have easy access to a site, it wouldn't hurt to check them out now because in many instances, bluebirds will use a nest box as an overnight roost, and they'll all come in together, six or eight or even 10.
Yeah.
Bluebirds will cluster together and share the bluebird nest box and use, you know, just share the comfort and warmth.
All right. Peggy writes in. Oh, no. The second question from Peggy. I'm sorry. What if the birdhouses cannot be reached? Will future birds just clean them out and use them?
Yes, for the most part, yes. But it's always a good idea, especially with small songbird nest boxes, to check them out to make sure that you sweep out any old debris in there, especially
mm-hmm.
any organic matter, and also to check, make sure there's no mouse living in there, or worse yet, that there may have been hornets in there. So it's a good idea to just at least do an inventory, a walkthrough. And
but what if she again, says Peggy says she can't reach that?
Yeah, then it's that becomes then in that case you're going to have to leave it up to the birds to do the house cleaning
okay.
themselves.
All right, Andrew in Croton-on-Hudson sent a picture, and somebody else sent a picture. A, Rich is not in the building, but B, you know, we really can't do that much with pictures. But I think that the description that Andre sent is just fine. Andre writes, "I'm a woodworker. Build some birdhouses for myself. Just wondering how far apart should I put them in my backyard? Also, are some bird species, you know, if you can, look, couple things. One, I can't read too well. All right, I'm an old timer. Two, if you can maybe proofread on your own, we might be able to do better. Also, are some bird species not minding being close to each other in their bird nest? So the first one was how far apart, and then the other one was do some bird species get along in the bird nest?
The answer to the second question first is yes.
Okay.
Some birds do tolerate close neighbors, but most do not, especially our songbirds. Now, with bluebirds, I would say at least 40 yards apart,
yeah,
at least, depending on the habitat. And then some of the other birds, it's a matter of how much of food potential is available. and the nature of the bird species. Some of them have wider. So you have to really kind of know what bird you're dealing with and work it from there.
All right, Rich Guthrie, one more email, and then we will take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. This one is from Roger in Utica. Just a reminder, Christmas bird counts are up. Kirkland Bird Club has one centering on New Hartford, Clinton, and Utica on Sunday, December 22nd. As always, looking for more volunteers to survey our circle, not sure of size, 10 or 15 miles in diameter. I suspect getting volunteers is an issue in many clubs. Any idea on how many clubs in New York and Massachusetts participate? And that's from Roger in Utica.
Yes, thanks, Roger. That's a very good point, one I actually had on my list to bring up today. If you go to the National Audubon Society Christmas bird count on the internet, if you Google that, you'll see a map of the United States and Canada and Bermuda and Hawaii and all that. Just zoom in on New York, Massachusetts, Vermont, Connecticut, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Just zoom in to your locale, and you'll see numerous circles that indicate the location of each and every different bird count that has been and will be conducted this year. And you can tap on that and get the contact information from there. So that's a good place to start. And yes, I encourage all folks to get in there and do a Christmas bird count with friends, your neighbors, your family. All's good.
All right, let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. Julie Hart has the month off, and we will talk more birds with you, including with Merle in Argyle, who has apparently done his homework. We'll find out what that means. Oh, yeah, buddy, the wiggle walk. There's Count Basie from Count Basie Plays Carter. Benny Carter, that is, here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie joins us on the phone today for a talk about birds with you. And let's begin in Argyle. Merle, it says here on the screen that you've done your homework. I wasn't aware we gave you any. What's up?
Yeah, you did last month.
Okay.
The green-headed duck.
The green-headed duck. Now, we've lost signal. Are you still there, Merle? This is the quietest Merle has ever been. Should we give him a minute, Zach? Okay, tell you what. We're going to put Merle on hold and give it a shot, Merle. You might have got excited about the green-headed duck. Rich, do you want to talk at all about the green-headed duck? Well, we've lost everybody. Well, this is just wonderful. The number here is 800-348-2551. You know, every now and then, you have these nightmares as a broadcaster. And one of the nightmares, and I had it almost every night during the lockdown, was that the phones wouldn't work. And then my guest would be gone. And then the calls would be gone. And I'd be just sitting here not knowing what to say. Well, this is one of those times. And those...
Am I here, Ray?
Oh, hi. Welcome back, Rich. I was just about
I didn't know. I didn't go anywhere. I'm still here.
That's fantastic. Great to have you here. Merle will call us back, I'm sure. Anyway,
okay.
He talked about some homework with a green-headed duck. I don't know.
Yes.
Just say something.
Yeah, the green-headed duck. That's a common name for the mallard. The male mallard has a beautiful beetle green head.
Okay.
And so I don't know where he was going to go with that, but there you go.
That was it, huh? Okay.
Oh, that's all I got with.
All right, tell you what.
Green head duck is a mallard.
Merle, if you're listening at home, if nothing terrible has happened, give us a call back at 800-348-2551. Meantime, we'll mosey on over to Fultonville. Sarah, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling because I would love you to talk a little bit about the murmurations of starlings. I've been seeing them. Oh, the last time I saw them maybe was a couple weeks ago, and I want to know if they're still around, and I'm assuming that they depart for parts south. I'd appreciate anything you can tell us.
Okay, Rich.
Sure. The starling is... The murmurations of the starling is a magnificent sight to see. It is incredible aerial orchestrated dance that they do as a group. It has a lot of different possible meanings, and The one that I associate most with that is the presence of a hawk. And what will happen is a flock of starlings will fly up in a tight group, and then through some sort of coordinated signals, they go through a aerial dance that creates these waves of motion in the sky. And my understanding of the reason for that is to, first of all, to distract the raptor, and also form a group that is in unity, in numbers, their strength, and so deter the raptor from attacking any individual within that group. And the starling is a year-round resident to our area. They stay here through the winter. In fact, during this time of year, they gather in those large flocks so that in favorable areas. The unfortunate part of it is that they're very voracious eaters, and they will strip a lot of the overwintering fruit from berry trees and shrubs, leaving those bare for some of our other native bird species, like the bluebird and the waxwing and the overwintering robins. But the starling, the motion of that murmuration is one of my favorite sights to see.
Sarah.
That's wonderful. I'm wondering if you know anything about, I've heard that they're studying how the murmurations are done. You know, they don't touch each other. And it's like, I don't know, electrical signals that somehow or other they're able to sense so that they can fly that close.
Hmm. Yes, there is. There have been some slow motion videos taken of that movement. And the indications are, from what I understand, is that a single trigger of emotion from one individual bird is picked up by the rest of the group in sequence, rapid sequence. So it appears that they're all moving simultaneously when, in fact, they're moving in sequence forming that sort of wave that you see up there.
Hmm.
So it's more of a visual cue that they respond to. And in their time frame, which to us looks like it's instantaneous, but to them, it's all in time.
All right, Sarah, thank you very much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Now, if you recall, a couple few minutes ago, Merle from Argyle had some groundbreaking news, some research he had done, and then he destroyed the entire phone system. He's back. Let's keep our fingers crossed. Merle in Argyle, you're on.
Okay, we'll try again.
Okay.
All right, this was, I'm going to mispronounce it, but green-headed duck measuring or measurer or whatever. But anyway, it was, you thought it was a mating ritual. The birds were diving into the flock that were swimming in the pond, and some of them went straight up out of the water, 6 feet in the air, turned around, dived back down.
Yeah.
And anyway, it was very interesting to watch.
Okay.
And the follow-up is basically that was a one only. I've seen them two more weeks, two more times. They aren't gathering like male and female. There were a flock of about 25, and they were pretty 5-to-1 males to females, and they weren't swimming together.
Okay.
Like geese do. So anyway,
okay,
you thought it might be mating, but it may be, or
okay,
maybe they were just
right,
cleaning themselves.
All right, so what do you think,
anyway,
Rich?
That was the homework.
Oh, okay. Do you want to comment
and
on that,
now
Rich?
Now they're gone.
They're gone now.
Now they're gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing because I imagine some of that water is freezing over by now.
Right.
And, yeah, I still think that it is part of a mating ritual, a courtship ritual. And what you got there is a bunch of bachelors that is sort of like left on the on the side of the dance floor.
A bunch of teenagers.
Teenagers,
yeah, teenagers. They're little. They don't have their act together.
Okay.
But the there are many of them out there that are paired up already.
Yeah.
And will continue to be so through the winter into spring. But then again, there's still a lot of chances out there. So These guys aren't about to give up too soon.
All right, Merle, that was good. I'm glad you called back. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie. Let's go to Richmond, New Hampshire. Sean, you're on.
Okay. Richmond is in the southwestern corner of New Hampshire, almost Vermont, almost Massachusetts.
Gotcha.
It's a very rural area, all wooded, and it has a rich bird fauna in the good weather, but lately it's been a complete absence. No chickadees, no nuthatches, no creepers. I don't know what's going on, but it's what's happening.
Rich.
Well, some of these birds, first of all, I'm surprised to hear that, because a day like today will draw them in. If you have an active feeding station there now, it should be busy as all get out, because the birds that have been avoiding it or boycotting it or just finding a better source someplace else will suddenly remember where your food supply is and come in. It's happening right here in my backyard. And some of those birds that you mentioned are regional vagrants. They'll move around and discover new areas and may fall in love with that better than what they found. But I would not give up hope. As far as I know, there hasn't been any significant decline in the songbird populations that you mentioned. So, but today is an opportunity for a lot of people to keep an eye on their bird feeders, because the rare birds, the ones that don't belong here, the lost wanderers, will eyeball a flock of birds coming to your bird feeder, and it will draw them in. Whether they stay or not is a different question. But rare birds do show up at bird feeders on a day like today with a snowstorm that makes them a little more desperate and anxious to find some food. So, and okay. I might add to that is those people who have left a hummingbird feeder out, there are some hummingbirds that are still coming to bird feeders. We have a couple of them in our listening area that I know of, perhaps some more that are going unnoticed or haven't been reported. And I know there's some very rare hummingbirds coming to feeders in different parts of New York State and adjacent states. So those people that left their hummingbird feeders out, some of them have warming hummingbird feeders that keep the water, sugar water from freezing.
Yeah.
And others bring their feeders in at night and bring them back out in the morning,
right,
so that they're fresh and thawed.
That work for you, Sean?
Well, I just find this extremely strange. I've never seen it before. Only birds I've seen in a whole week, much of which was spent outside, was, oddly enough, a bald eagle, and today I heard a kingfisher in the distance. That's it.
That's an odd mix. And I'm really surprised that you're not seeing the nuthatches, titmice, chickadees and cardinals and those typical backyard bird feeder birds. So
nothing, no blue jays, no nothing.
Keep an eye out and let us know if that is a continuing trend.
All right, Sean. Hey, thank you. Hey, I love hearing from New Hampshire. Call us next month and let us know how you did if they all came back. Let's go to Ulster, and it's Ted's turn. Ted, you want to talk about birds? Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Rich and Ray.
Hi.
Yeah. While I was on hold, I want to talk about avoiding bird strikes on windows.
Okay.
But while I was on hold, I heard like a scurrying tapping outside my window.
Yeah.
And I tapped, and a bird flew out.
Oh.
And we have about 6 inches in my gutter, my rain gutter.
They love it in the gutters. Okay. Yeah. We have blue jays that would do that. We would get water, maybe it would get clogged and there'd be a little water. We would have blue jays in our gutter. They'd be hanging out, yeah.
There's 6 inches of snow, though.
Well, I don't know about today, man. Well, take that up with Rich.
Okay,
that could be. Okay, just about the bird that was tapping. It could be a titmouse or a nuthatch or a chickadee trying to crack open a seed to get at the kernel. So they do that quite often. And a hard surface like a drain pipe or gutter might be their location of choice. And it might also trying to be stashing it away, saving it for later if they could remember where they put it.
Under 6 inches of snow.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
What was your actual question?
Yeah. To avoid bird strikes on windows, I understand putting up lines or avoiding light inside the house or keeping bird feeders away from the windows. But I want about, I was going to put black duct tape X's, but I heard that, can you fine tune that on the outside? I'd rather put them on the inside.
Well, I don't know that that should make a difference, but there are some tapes that are virtually invisible to our eyes that emit a ultraviolet reflection that the birds can see, and putting that on a window deters them from flying into it. They recognize it as a tight spot that they can't fit through.
Yeah, okay. Someone looked online for me, and they said that vertical lines are best, and I guess I'll just try some black duct tape. But
yes, okay. So, well, I haven't heard of anybody using a duct tape or any black tape.
Well, I can look for the ultraviolet, but I'd rather not spend the money.
Yeah.
I understand that. Well, you can see how that works. Again, I'm going to assign some homework
once
here.
Once or twice a year, we have a bird strike, once or twice a year. I had a bird sighting. Can you tell me what it might have been for last, or should I let other people go?
Well, go ahead, Ted, very quickly.
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. I saw this bird. It was like robin size, but it had very bright orange and yellow head.
Orange and yellow head.
Yeah.
Well,
this is in the summer.
That's very intriguing. And a few kind of rare possibilities come to mind. And I'm going to suggest if you look at a picture of a Western tanager, that's a bird that occasionally, very, very rarely, two berries in there, that will show up in the winter in our area. It sounds like the male Western tanager.
It was summer. The rest of the body was kind of bland, but semi bright, orange and red in the head. So I looked at it with binoculars, way in the top of a tree. I had some cheap binoculars.
About how big was it? Let me just ask you that, and then we'll have to move
on. Robin size, a little bit smaller than
robin size. Okay.
They might be thinking I have a thought disorder, but I only have a mood disorder.
So. Rich will do some homework, Ted, and maybe we'll have some answers for you next time. Thank you for the call.
Yes. Well, if you get a picture, let us share it.
I'm surprised you're not thumbing through that book of yours right now, Rich.
Well, I've got my hands full to try to maintain contact with you, Ray.
Oh, you're holding the handset. That is what a pro you really are. It's amazing. One more call here before the next break, and then you can put the phone down for 30 or 40 seconds. John is in Chester, Massachusetts. John, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Ray.
Howdy.
I'm calling in regard to barn swallow behavior. My wife and I, we have a small farm. We have chickens, so there's feathers in the yard. Last summer, we were watching the barn swallows, and one flew down and picked up a chicken feather and flew away. I thought, it's going to go make a nest. It flew about 30 feet in the air, and the feather came free from the bird, and like an acrobatic airplane, the barn swallow swooped around and picked it up and out of midair, and then it flew off, and it did that not once, twice, but four times, like it was playing with the feather. I told my wife about this because she hadn't witnessed it, and she sat with me on the bench, and sure enough, another sparrow or the same one came by and got another feather and grabbed it, flew up, let it go, came back real quick, grabbed it, as if it was playing frisbee with itself with a feather in the barnyard. It was amazing behavior.
Yeah, it's incredible. And, a lot of people scoff at the idea, but I do believe that birds, like other animals, like to have a little fun every now and then. And I suspect that's what was going on there. And I'm wondering if you are you certain it was a barn swallow, not maybe a tree swallow? Are you certain it was a barn swallow?
Well, we have barn swallows that make their nests in the summer in our barn. We welcome them. So whether it was a tree sparrow or a barn swallow, I really couldn't be positive. But it flew through the barn, and then it did come to the ground and pick up a feather and recreational or – yep.
Yeah. Well, I know tree swallows will do that quite often, and I have not seen barn swallows do it, but I wouldn't put it past them. And, yes, I think it's part of I'm sorry to say to some of my colleagues out there that it is playful action, but it may also have something to do with nest construction and courtship behavior, because the tree swallow especially will use bird feathers as nest liners. The barn swallow, not so much, but it may be a spinoff from that behavior.
John, we got to take a break here, but thank you for calling. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll check the email bag in a moment. Look, I know I have a problem, but I can't get enough Basie. That's about 1958. Love Me Baby here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. And it's Braids with Rich Guthrie today. Let's check the email back. This one is from Patricia in Middletown. I was walking in a mowed path field in October near Sugarloaf in Orange County, New York. Heard quite a variety of familiar and unfamiliar bird songs. I was able to locate the sounds, all coming from one bush located next to a road, and used Merlin to identify the sounds. The sounds identified included local birds, out-of-the-area birds, and birds that should have already moved on. The birds were northern mockingbird, eastern bluebird, eastern phoebe, northern cardinal, red-eyes vireo, American robin, Baltimore oriole, semi-palmated sandpiper. Wow, semi-palmated. That'll get you 12 Hail Marys. Lesser yellow leg. I'm thinking all the noise was from a mockingbird. Is this accurate, and is it common?
Well, yes. First of all, that's quite the repertoire for one single mockingbird.
Ugh.
And some of those may be kind of like a little messed up, and Merlin was confused and threw a couple of names out there that maybe wouldn't apply. But nonetheless, yes, it sounds to me like you had a very vigorous mockingbird singing his heart out at for you.
Amazing. Okay, let's go to another email from Peggy in South Caro. I grind my eggshells for plant fertilizer. Do birds like the shells broken or ground up?
Well, it's hard to say. It depends a lot on the actual bird needs and the type of bird that we're talking about. So it would be a calcium regenerator for some of these birds, and go either way. Crack and crunch, grind and spread. There could be a wide variety of opportunities there. So
okay.
Mix it up a little.
All right, here's a question about cleaning a bird feeder, and in specific, a tube feeder. Michelle and Ware says, describe the best method for cleaning a 20-inch tube feeder. Our kitchen sink isn't big enough to soak it. How often should it be cleaned?
Well, if there's any indication that there are the potential for some contamination, especially from disease-carrying birds, then I would clean it immediately before letting any other birds come to it. Otherwise, maybe once or twice a year should be fine if
okay.
There are no other indicators. And to do that, what I would do is simply just fill it up with water and, you know, well, it's kind of hard with the openings for the seed. But see what you can do, just running cleaning water through there cup after cup and let it just kind of like flow down the tube and out the vents. And just a mild solution of a chlorine mixture, and that should probably do the trick. I wouldn't go too overboard with it, especially
okay.
if there are no other bad indicators involved.
All right, one more email for now, and then we'll get back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's Birds, and this is from Anonymous, who writes, my condo association forbids hummingbird feeders because of rodents. My neighbors claim they help pollinators. How can we resolve this collaboratively?
Well, I can't see why. It sounds like the association is working on bad information. A hummingbird feeder should be of very little, if to zero, interest to rodents, especially one that is hung up suspended from a perch or a string. So I would revisit and petition the association to reconsider that that mandate. So yes, you should be able to have a hummingbird feeder outside your window that you can keep clean and the like, and work on that. Otherwise, if you can plant some flowers in a flower box, I certainly hope they don't prohibit flower boxes.
Or ham radio antennas.
Yes, I know the radio antennas. There's a workaround with that, but we can't apply that to birds, I don't think.
Right.
But, you know, that's an interesting avenue.
All right.
But in any event, I would revisit, I would petition the association to get a little scientific information and work from that, not from rumors and stories.
Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's 800-348-2551. Greg is in Rhinebeck. Greg, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was in Oswego County yesterday, and I was quite surprised to see at least a dozen very large flocks of snow geese going south. First of all, my first question is, that seems a bit late to me. What do you think? And the second question is, wouldn't they be aware of this storm that we're now in if they're heading down in that direction?
Rich.
Well, you would think they would be. They birds do react to falling barometers, and I guess the snow geese are just pushing their luck, trying to get as much behind them as they can. And yes, it is late for snow geese to be moving now, but I've seen them moving later in the season. And yesterday was kind of a blue sky day, one that they would take advantage of before the snow would hit. And towards
well,
evening, I'm
I
sure
was,
they were
it
looking
was actually
for
snowing all day long. they were
oh,
in the
yeah,
thick
okay,
of it there.
Oswego County. Okay, well, in that case, they're living to their name. They're out there and enjoying the snow. Never mind, that's bad. But they were forced out of where they were keeping, staying put, and they're on their way. And I think, given the snow yesterday, they're probably work their way out of a snow squall, a local squall, and hopefully find a nice place to set down for the evening and then
Chesapeake
sit out the storm.
Say it again, Greg.
Say it again.
I'm sorry. They were heading towards Chesapeake Bay, I would assume?
Oh, yeah. Eventually, they'll be going all the way down to Chesapeake Bay, Delaware Bay, to spend the winter down further south, yes.
All right, Greg, thanks a lot for the call. Now we go to Laura, who's in Western Massachusetts. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Rich. I'm a long-time listener, and this is my first ever bird call.
Oh, my gosh, welcome.
So
We've been waiting for you, Laura.
I've been waiting for you guys, too. So I live at the base of Mount Toby in Western Massachusetts. I live in the forest. It's about 1,100-foot hill, and I am very accustomed to the barred owls. I listen to them all the time. I've figured out their different vocalizations. I've even had some juveniles hanging around my house. But last night, with a full moon, in the middle of the night, I was awakened by a new owl sound.
Ooh.
And when I tried to listen to the different owl sounds online, I thought it was a great horned owl. And I've never heard that sound around here. Is that possible?
It certainly is. And great horned owls and barred owls are local to most of the listening area. And they don't get along all that well together. I'm thinking that if the great horned owl moved in to the territory, the barred owl is going to have to step aside for a little while and yield to the great horned owl.
I haven't heard the barred owls in at least a week or two, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Huh. Rich, what is what does a great horn sound like?
The great horned is they're kind of one of the real hoot owls. It goes, hoo, hoo,
yes.
Hoo,
wow,
hoo.
Cool. Could you do that again?
That
sure. The great horn.
That's what it was doing. And the barred owl sounds are so different. I was it woke me up from sleep in the middle of the night.
Laura, thank you for that. That's great.
Well, you got both of them now.
Ho, ho, ho. I think I can do it too. Ho, ho, ho. Is that good, Rich?
Is that another call, Rich?
Okay. Sally's in Albany. Sally, you're on.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Sure. Go ahead.
Thank you, Sally.
All right. Thanks very much. Yes, I wanted to simply to report an odd sighting and see what you have to say about this. I was coming 4th of July weekend of this year, coming up through the hills northeast of Cortland, and I was too close to misidentify this. It was a gray-lined hawk. Apparently, their northern range is the southwest of the United States, but I'm pretty sure that's what I saw, and I wanted to know what you think.
You got a picture?
That's what he always said, Sally. No, it drives me crazy.
I was driving. Yeah, there is no confirmation of this. I apologize, but I was driving those windy switchback roads on an uphill. There
I understand.
A,
I've been there.
Some kind of utility wire hanging over, and the hawk was very close directly above me. So I'm pretty confident because it's not supposed to be
well,
here.
Yes, you're right. They're not supposed to be here. And, in fact, yeah, the gray hawk is a resident of the Mexican border of our southern states, Arizona, Texas, and New Mexico and the like. Very, very, very unlikely. So I tell you what, if you can put a description in place, if you don't mind, and send it to me, and if you care to. But off the top of my head, there are some possibilities, misidentifications, and I think that's the road we're going to have to go down.
Sally, doesn't it bother you that you get deflated like this by Rich? He does this every time. He does it every time.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't, and I'll tell you why.
Sally.
Go ahead, Sally.
No. Thank you. I appreciate it because I expected you to say that. The one thing that prompted the call was one place I read that the bird had been expanding its range. Now, that'd be a heck of an expansion, but I thought it was worth a call.
Well, I mean, Rich's email address is richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
And go if you for it, yes.
Send him a description.
I will.
And, Sally, you never know. Rich is very skeptical of these things. But, I mean, Rich thought he saw this very rare woodpecker that's supposed to be extinct, and he didn't get a picture either, and I don't believe him.
Oh.
All right, then. Fair point, Ray.
All right, Sally, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Once again, Rich, your email address is?
My name, Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie, Guthrie, @gmail.com.
Okay, let's go to, it's either Burlington or Burlingham. Bob, where are you?
I'm in Burlingham, New York.
You are on the air, sir.
Wow.
Thank you. And how you guys doing? Yeah, Burlingham, little tiny place, wonderful out in the woods. I'm very happy here. And but nearby is the city of Middletown, New York. And for at least 3 decades, I have consistently seen huge flocks of crows just in Middletown, New York, all the time. And it's just so weird that it's just one place and hundreds of crows. And even this week, I see them. And not anywhere else in the general area. Do birds have an affinity for a certain place, like or crows especially? It kind of just seems like a phenomenon to me.
You're right on target there. Yes, crows congregate in the winter in sometimes very, very, very large flocks spend the winter evenings and nighttimes as a group. Then in the daytime, fly out, just commute to their lunch spot, turn around and come back in the evening all together. And they return to the same spot night after night after night. And these spots can be located far apart, maybe dozens of miles to the next one, but they are scattered around, and some magic attraction draws them all into that one locale. But it is something that happens only during the wintertime. During the springtime, they don't like their neighbors so much.
That's interesting. Bob.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Ann in Schoharie. Ann, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi. Well, Rich, I used to work at DEC in environmental ed and knew you back in the Wolf Road days. And
sure,
Ray,
hi,
I'm one of the trios at Ann's from the Antique
Oh,
Rent
my
Show.
God. You were great. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Well, thank you. I just wanted to remind the listeners that the 2026 is the 50th anniversary of the reintroduction of the bald eagle to New York State. And if anybody is interested in finding out more about it, there is a wonderful book by the woman who worked for Cornell, Tina Morris, called Return to the Sky. And it's all about her, how she had to pioneer the various techniques for hacking eagles and at Montezuma Wildlife Refuge. And I was there at the time, and it was really a fascinating time to, you know, and now I drive down my road and I see bald eagles. So it's really great.
What a great success story it was, Rich.
Absolutely. And I, you know, and then it caught on all around the Northeast. The other states looked over and saw what New York was doing and says, hey, let's do that too. And it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful, great idea by our colleagues in New York DEC.
And we're just about out of time, but thank you very much for the call. Betsy quickly writes in, what do you think of these bird feeders with cameras? They're pricey, but look really cool. Are they worth it?
I think they are really, really cool. They take a crummy picture. You know, it's all distorted because it has like a fisheye lens on it.
Yeah, yeah.
But you get around that, you get to know who's coming to your feeder. And some of these things you can connect by Wi-Fi, and you could be someplace else. You could be sitting at the office and wondering, why am I not home? These birds are coming to my feeder.
All right, Rich. Well, listen, we're done, man. Thanks for calling in here today, and we'll see you hopefully in person next month.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Ray. And Julie, come back. We miss you.
She'll be back, too. Thank you, sir. Support comes from Fatigan's Nursery, Latham. Ready for the holidays with fresh-cut trees, decorated wreaths, fresh garlands, classic evergreens, heirloom ornaments, and more. Family-owned and operated since 1920. Fatigans.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Through the Lens, photographs by John Bain Young, arkellmuseum.org. And Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the Shir Kaddish Trio in Clifton Park for the upcoming holidays, December 9th, 7 p.m. Registration at sgca.sgcf@gmail.com. Once again, thanks to Rich Guthrie for being here. Julie Hart will be back with Rich next month when we do this again. Don't forget, it's still Giving Tuesday. You can make your pledge or donation to this station at wamc.org. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, Peter Hughes, who not only came to work today, volunteered to do the phones. Thank you, sir. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Home Improvement with Darren Tracy. We'll see you, too.